it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Episode 7 of the Hockey News on the Cube, brought to you by BetMGM. It's lucky number 7, and we are lucky enough to have with us, in place of Jamie Tozer, who is having a little bit of flight troubles over on the left coast and cannot be here with us this evening. Instead, we have no less of an authority on the Cube. He is the play-by-play voice of the Cape Breton Eagles, and I've happen to have known him for the better part of 2 decades, actually longer than that. So he's a natural choice to bring on here tonight for his insights. Patrick McNeil. Pat, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me, Will. Yeah, we've actually known each other longer than any of the players in the Cube have been alive. Not to date ourselves or make us feel old, but look forward to discussing the exploits of these young, fantastic young athletes tonight.
Yes, wonderful. And yeah, don't feel old at all. That's great. So, Pat, you know, we all know the Eagles' start to the season, less than ideal, one win in the first 11 games. We've talked about it, Jamie and I have, in the week since that rocky start. There was a 6-game winning streak. Things have leveled off a little bit. But overall, the Eagles are sort of, seems like they're hitting their stride. And as you've sort of indicated to me, even in some of the losses as of recent, the score may not indicate the caliber of play that the Eagles have been showing us.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, as you said, it was a rough start to the season. And obviously this current homestand not going as well as the team would have liked, but certainly they've kind of put that bad start in the rearview mirror. As I think of a combination of a lot of different things, and Hurricane Fiona, I think, negatively affected all the 902 area teams. And obviously bringing in Trevor Thurston on the back end and Oliver Shattenkirk to solidify the goaltending would be kind of the two turning points of the season. And now also too, you have to remember this team brought in a lot of players in the offseason, both young and old, at something like 7 returning guys. So I think there was the matter of piecing all that together. And now the team is kind of coming together as a group and finding out what they are. Had a rough finish to the road trip to Quebec, where they lost to Chicoutimi and they were just out of gas, but it was probably the game against St. John coming off that road trip that nobody was mincing any words about how disappointing that was. And, you know, you hope you just gradually get better coming off that loss and hopefully finish with a win against Victoriaville to conclude the homestand on a Wednesday night game. But it's definitely better than what we saw at the beginning of the year and just kind of becoming part of that logjam, so to speak, in the Eastern Conference. I think it's going to be a pretty competitive battle for the playoff spots and maybe even the home ice spot. That's what the Eagles hope to be in the middle of before it's all said and done.
Yeah, and another thing too with the Eagles, of course, and we're going to talk about the Victoriaville take here fairly shortly. But before we leave from the Eagles' standpoint, you know, it's been a rough few years, and not just the play on the ice in Cape Breton as the team continues to build up from that aborted run in 2020. You know, there's COVID in itself. There's you mentioned Hurricane Fiona, which we've also alluded to previously as being a factor in what's happened early this year. And, you know, attendance has suffered as a result. But there's a very unique night on Friday night. I just want to get your thoughts on it before we go along any further, Pat. It was Reconciliation at the Rink night on Friday, which, of course, you know, Reconciliation is now in the forefront of a lot of people's minds, much more than it ever was in years past. The Eagles and Cape Breton as a whole have that close-knit affiliation with the 5 local First Nations groups. They lost to the Mooseheads by a score of 6-2, but they also had 2,500 fans in the stands, which is their highest single-game total in over a year. Just what were your observations, not just from the play on the ice, but really just the atmosphere in the stands? What was it like to have a decent number of fans back at Center 200?
Well, obviously the game itself was a disappointment because anytime you lose to your biggest rival, that's unfortunate. Maybe a little bit closer than the score indicated, but a loss is a loss, I guess. But in terms of the atmosphere and the event, I think everybody came away with very good reviews. It was really cool to incorporate the 5 different First Nations, and also New Dawn Enterprises locally actually purchased tickets for school kids for kids from each of the reservations, and just having different people in the building, stepping aside from the whole purpose of the event, a lot of those kids were making noise, made for a good atmosphere. There was maybe some more boisterous go Eagles, go chants than we're used to hearing, which was really cool to see. And you know, we'd love to see those people back in the building again. As you said, reconciliation is kind of on the forefront of the mind these days. So it's an important event, and also was actually an offshoot from something the Eagles did last year. Last year, the Eagles decided to introduce something called Heritage Night, which would honor just different things around the island, whether it be, you know, First Nations people or industry in general. You know, in the future, the team would like to have a Heritage Night, you know, honoring coal mining or steel. But after the Heritage Night for the Mi'kmaq went so well, this should really be its own event, especially given the importance of reconciliation in the current climate. The uniforms are obviously great. They were very well received by everybody. And there was some Indigenous dancers out to start the game. That was really cool. It was a nice opportunity for them to showcase their culture. And I apologize for Shailen Paul, I think her name was. I apologize. I don't remember her name off the top of my head, but the anthem singer, she was outstanding. It was one of the best renditions of O Canada I've heard at any Q rink this year. So it was a nice opportunity to spotlight local talent in that respect. And it was kind of cool. The kids, the cleanup crew that shovels the ice were from some of the reservations. So really, they kind of were incorporated into every aspect of the game day presentation. I wanted to shout out to Nadine Bernard, who's from Eskazoni First Nation. She was on with me at the second intermission. And she was co-organizer of the event along with Lindsay McIntosh, the GM of business operations. And she did a great job. And it was really cool to hear her insight on things. So, yeah, I think overall it went really well. And people seem to be looking forward to the next one.
Excellent, Patton. Great initiative by the Eagles. Something that we're starting to see a little bit throughout the league, but to have the franchise in Cape Breton really embrace it. And like you say, it's a close-knit community. The island as a whole is a close-knit community. I think a lot of people get to see that as a result of what happened on Friday night. So with that, let's go around the league a little bit. And our first stop is going to be in Drummondville. They've been in the spotlight the last couple of weeks on this podcast. Not for the greatest of reasons. Of course, last week was the firing of Steve Hartley from 2 weeks previous. Last Wednesday was announced that the replacement for Hartley has been found. He's a first-time coach in the QMJHL as a head coach, and his name is Eric Belanger. And if you followed the Q, you know, 25 to 30 years ago, it's a name that should be familiar with you. He was a high-scoring forward with the old Beauport Harfang and the Rimouski Oceanic. He was coaching in the ECHL. And plucked from the 12 every year team in the ECHL. Pat, give me your thoughts on what you make of this, maybe what this hiring signifies for the Voltigeur.
Well, certainly an out-of-nowhere hire. It's not very often that you see a guy coaching in the pro ranks leave pros to coach junior mid-season, no less. It's very unusual. Certainly seems to have a pedigree where he's kind of skyrocketing up the ranks. It didn't take him long into his coaching tenure to catch on coaching in Trois-Rivières. And they've been generally a winning team since he's been there, so that's good. Kind of has the player profile of somebody who would make a good coach because, as you said, he was a scorer in the queue, but once he got to the NHL, he was one of these guys who had to become more of a two-way player, has experience playing in Europe too, which I think is beneficial as a coach because he can probably relate more easily to a variety of players because he's kind of been around everywhere in terms of where he's coached. Obviously inherits a team that's talented on paper. It's kind of surprising too that this came together so quickly because obviously Philippe Boucher has experience coaching himself. You know, he probably didn't want to be coaching too long, but the Volts would have been in good hands with him behind the bench. So it certainly is evidence that something came together that he really liked, and it's an interesting hire. And I have no reason to believe it won't be successful. Certainly wish Steve Hartley the best. He was always a great interview when I talked to him and a great hockey mind, and hopefully things will work out for him going forward. But I think there's reason for optimism for Drummondville, and always exciting to see former Q players coaching in the league too. So, you know, we'll see what Eric can do in Drummondville. And I think, you know, expectations were probably pretty high. The thing with Steve Hartley, this may have been more of a long-term sign. You look back a couple of years ago and back-to-back years when they traded for Pio Joseph and then Joe Valeno, and you know, those playoff runs weren't as long as I'm sure Philippe Boucher would have liked. So, you know, maybe they gave Steve Hartley his opportunity, and now it's time to move on to something else, and we'll see what Eric Belanger can do behind the bench.
Yeah, and you know, it's a very good point you make, Pat, about former players entering the queue. You know, back, you know, you and I, we've been following this league for, you know, roughly the same amount of time, 25 years plus. And, you know, those names that we used to be very familiar with behind the bench, whether it was, you know, Richard Martel or Joe Canale, Raoul Paimon, Alain Rajot, just to name a few, all of those guys have, you know, gone by the wayside, and it seems to be the guys who were coached by those same guys, by and large, whether it's a guy like Eric Bélanger or a guy like Gordy Dwyer in Bathurst or Bruce Richardson in Blainville. These guys seem to be the next wave coming through, and it's kind of interesting. It's kind of generational. It's almost like watching, you know, and we're starting to see it a little bit, the, you know, the kids of players that we might have watched in the queue, you know, 20, 25 years ago, they're now making their first appearance in the league. So it's just that interesting. I guess part of it just shows how long we've been following the league.
Yes.
But it's also just kind of an interesting tidbit to see these guys who, you know, we watched lace them up. But the Voltigeurs, they have a 3-game schedule this week. Fairly easy games, you know, not every game is a challenge, obviously, but three teams in the lower half of the standings. They're home to Shawinigan, home to Blainville, and they're in Shawinigan in Blainville, I apologize, and they are home to the St. John Sea Dogs to wrap up this week's action. And I want to go back to Blainville Boisbriand Armada because they made headlines earlier today. We're recording on a Monday evening, by the way, by trading Josh Lawrence, a 20-year-old star forward, to the Halifax Mooseheads for a couple of draft picks, including a first rounder in 2024, coming back the other way from the Mooseheads. Pat, you know, this is a guy with Memorial Cup experience. He's a 100-point guy in the league. What do you think? Obviously, Cam Russell saw the skill and the point in bringing him from that standpoint to the Mooseheads. But what do you see him perhaps doing within this Mooseheads lineup?
Well, just gives them another weapon, first and foremost, as you said, brings the experience in terms of having won the Memorial Cup. Maybe a bit of a question mark in terms of additional playoff experience, given that St. John was bumped from the playoffs and didn't have a run the year prior as well. But certainly in terms of point production, you know what you're going to get from Josh Lawrence. He was a producer since he was 18, really at an elite level. And it really kind of, I guess, paying dividends for Halifax that they kept those 18-year-old spots open. This would be a trade to me that fits the definition of shocking but not surprising. You see it and you're, whoa, you don't expect a big trade like that, especially at this time of year. But Blainville Boisbriand, not off to the start that they were hoping for. That's the understatement of this podcast. And Halifax had the opening, and we knew they're going to be good. They're really kind of starting to create space between them and the rest of the Maritime Division. And so it could be a situation of, even though maybe their core isn't peaking this season, maybe they'll try to strike while the iron's hot and see if they can run amok here amongst the rest of the Eastern Conference. But definitely an already gifted offensive team, especially with Zachary LaRue coming back, gets more talented. And, you know, kind of shuddering to think of the challenges the Eagles defense will be facing the next time they see this Halifax team in action.
Yeah, and that's a good point that you bring up with the Blainville Boisbriand Armada, Pat. They're a team that we haven't had the opportunity to talk about a lot on this podcast, you know, with myself and Jamie, but, you know, perhaps that's because we're kind of, you know, burying the lead when it comes to bad news. You know, the Armada, historically, they're actually a team that it seems that they always punch above their weight. Bruce Richardson, since he's came aboard, and especially Joël Bouchard before him as head coach, always seem to get the absolute most out of these teams. And this year, nothing seems to be clicking. Obviously, not getting Patrick Gay to report after acquiring him from Charlottetown in the offseason was huge. But, you know, we say that it's obviously an understatement that they are underachieving. How surprising do you think it is to see the Armada as far down in the standings as they are and making a move like this at this time?
The first part is very surprising. The second part, not, based on the first. You know, as you said, they're usually a team that punches above weight. I mean, you can look at the way Bruce Richardson's teams have performed in the past. He certainly seems to have a good pedigree as a coach. Might even end up being a blessing in disguise that Patrick Gay made the ECHL, because if he's playing, obviously they're going to be a bit higher up in the standings. But you have to think, if this team is as far away from the top of the Western Conference as they are without him, he's not going to be able to single-handedly lift them up. So it makes the decision to kind of go in this direction a little bit easier, because if you think that, you know, they've been willing to part ways with him, you know, maybe a guy like Zach Bigger that they acquired in the offseason is a guy that'll be available as well. So it is a little bit puzzling for sure that for whatever reason, the pieces haven't just panned together. The Western Conference is tough this year. We was talking about how the East is congested. So that is a bit of a part of it. Some teams are overachieving there, which I know we'll talk about momentarily. But yeah, definitely a surprise, because Blainville is a team, when you look at them traditionally on paper, if they don't have a lot, they'll still find a way to be competitive. And to see a team that has as much of a veteran presence as they do have, you know, with a good coach in place, it's a little bit surprising, but that, I guess that's a part of what makes junior hockey fun. Just maybe not so much if you're an Armada fan this season.
Yeah, and as far as Josh Lawrence and his new team, the Halifax Mooseheads, go, they are in Quebec, actually, for three games this week, visiting Rimouski, Baie-Comeau, and Chicoutimi. And you've already mentioned it. I've already mentioned it. We want to talk about one of those contentious teams in the Western Conference. That would be the Victoriaville TIG. Now, Pat, you're going to have the opportunity to see them on home ice at Center 200 on Wednesday. And you're going to see a team that I'm pretty sure nobody would have guessed at this time of the year is currently fighting for first place in the West. After missing the playoffs by a single point last year, 2 years removed from a President's Cup win in the protected environment. And here they are, you know, 8 wins in their last 10 games. They're getting contributions up and down the lineup. They've, you know, on the back end, Pierre-Olivier was the latest QMJHL player of the week. And, you know, Pat, from your own standpoint, you've already seen them play once in Victoriaville. They handed the Eagles a loss earlier in the season. I believe 5-3 might have been the score. What did you take from that first encounter against the Eagles, and what do you make of this start that Carl Millett and his gang is on?
A surprising start, no disrespect to the Victoriaville. Obviously, they have some good players, but didn't expect them to be at this level. They're a team that competes hard. They're a fun team to watch. A guy like Tommy Cormier is really electrifying, one of these prototypical smaller players that doesn't get a lot of respect from the pros, scouts or whatnot, that's very effective at the junior level. Pio Wah really does a great job of kind of driving the offense for the back end. I know he worked really hard in the offseason. I don't want to say took it personally that he wasn't drafted or even invited to a pro camp, but he wanted to work on all aspects of his game. And, you know, look at his assists right now are absolutely ridiculous. Probably says a lot about Maxime Pellerin's leadership. He's one of the few holdovers from that 2021 team. But I think looking at the bigger picture, it really speaks highly of both Carl Millett and Kevin Kluche. And we were just talking about guys that we saw play in the queue come around to coach. Well, Carl Millett plays for a President's Cup winning team in 2002, and then he coaches one in 2021. Kluche was behind the helm, obviously, before Carl Millett came there. And he can really go back to when they loaded up the year that they brought in Vitaly Abramov and they had that disappointing playoff run. And I thought, and others around the league thought, the next year was going to be really rough. And then they ended up winning in the first round against Val-d'Or, and they eventually win the President's Cup in 2021. So they're a team that seems to be able, at least under Kevin Kluche, to rebound a lot quicker than you think. And now we're seeing the quicker rebound end of 2021. Now, here's a really fascinating stat to me about this Victoriaville team. They're third in the Western Conference. They only have 4 19-year-old players on the roster. And all 4 of those 19-year-olds, none of them played in the league as regular players at 17. So their 4 19-year-olds are all second-year players. And obviously, there's a lot of talk about Gabriel Begg and how great he's been at the number 2 pick. But Nathan Darvaux is a heck of a partner in Nets playing at 19. It just, it's been, as you said, up and down the lineup. It's kind of by committee. Obviously, Pellerin has eye-popping numbers, but other than that, it's just been a lot of guys playing well, and it's, you can't argue the results.
No, definitely. No, we had Carl on the program here a couple of weeks ago, and you know, he sort of said basically the same thing as what you just said, Pat. You know, another guy that he brought up immediately was Thomas Bellegarde, of course, who they acquired from the Anctis Bathurst Titans. Maybe more of a fly under the radar sort of deal for the TIG, but certainly one that's already paying dividends. It just seems like everybody that they've slotted into that lineup has come up big for them. They're producing regularly. And of course, you mentioned Nathan Darvaux. What an outstanding run. I'm sure when Gabriel Degg was drafted second overall, the intent was to, you know, obviously shield him as best he could, but probably there would be a few nights where he might be fed to the lions, so to speak, whether the intent was to do that or not. I mean, obviously, it never is. But it's certainly been a very good development situation for him, in that Carl Millett knows he can rely on Nathan Darvaux every single night, and it's been resulting in victories throughout this season. Now, the Taker, of course, they're on their maritime swing, as we already mentioned. They're going to go visit Pat McNeil's Cape Breton Eagles on Wednesday evening. Then they will head over to Charlottetown to take on the Islanders before wrapping up that maritime road trip in Moncton. And speaking of teams that are shocking their respective leagues and shocking the hockey world, let's talk about one in the NHL this time. It's our NHL team profile of the week. We're going to talk about the, I can't believe I'm saying this, second place team in the Pacific Division, your Seattle Kraken.
And shout out to all the Kraken fans watching this.
Absolutely. Proud members of the original 32. And they, on top of being very successful, they are doing it with a couple of NHL alumni in the lineup. But also there's guys throughout the system who are contributing on the regular on a regular basis. One of those players still in the queue, the first ever drafted QMJHLer by the Kraken, Jacob Melanson, who went in the fifth round in back in 2021 to the as a member of the Acadie Bathurst T-Town, where he still plays. And a guy, Pat, you know, we've talked on this podcast already about guys like Riley Kidney, about, you know, guys like Joseph Henneberry, Ty Higgins. But make no mistake, Jacob Melanson is another one of those guys who is kind of quietly putting together a very solid season in the QMJHL.
Yeah, he absolutely terrorized the Eagles the two games we played in Bathurst earlier this year. A prototypical power forward, and that's one thing he's actually kind of has to work on is reining that in a little bit. He's already the first ever player suspended in a Seattle Kraken uniform, and based on preseason, actually had a chance to chat with him earlier, and he said that, they kind of want him to play that game. You know, a guy that plays on the edge, he is occasionally going to go over it, but just a physically dominating presence with great offensive skills. One of these guys that didn't really get the opportunity to shine as much as he is this season, just because either buried behind other players or he's had, unfortunately, a bad history with injuries. This year, thankfully, he's been able to kind of piece together a season where he's been on the ice more often than not. Suspensions aside, in both the NHL and the QMJHL, but I think the Kraken probably have to be ecstatic with what they've seen from him this year, just because he's shown he can become a guy that can really dominate the game. Now, he'll get tested playing on a young team like Bathurst. You're either rebuilding, there's going to be the games where, you know, when the tough get going, et cetera, et cetera. So that's some a game element of his game he'll get an opportunity to work on. But in terms of what he's displaying, in terms of his skills this year, like I said, power forward, and you know, they have to be happy with the step forward he's taken. And sometimes that happens with these guys drafted in the first round on the queue. You'll, the first couple of years, you know, for whatever reason, it won't, you won't see it, but then, you know, it clicks. And I think that's kind of been the case this year. They maybe more drafted him based on potential, and this year he's starting to fulfill that at the queue level.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've already talked about Maxime Pellerin earlier in this broadcast, Pat. He is definitely another guy who would fit that mold of a former first rounder in the queue that's finally coming into his own. Certainly not uncommon at this level. He is the only, as I mentioned, QMJHLer still in the queue that has ties to the Kraken. There's a couple of guys in the AHL in playing in beautiful Palm Desert, California, for the Coachella Valley Firebirds, and one of them, ironically, has a Cape Breton connection in a roundabout way. Luke Henman, who, of course, the main connection with the Kraken, not only is he playing for their AHL team, first ever player signed by the Kraken in the franchise's history. He was drafted by the Screaming Eagles, yep. And then made his way to the Blainville Wabiand Armada before playing a game in Cape Breton, but still spent five very productive years with the Armada. And certainly one of those guys, you can't help but wonder, you know, what how this is going to play out for him. He's actually, I think he's the only guy on the Firebirds without a point so far this season. But at the same time, I from all accounts, it sounds like he is playing kind of a depth bottom six forward role very effectively, which is definitely a bit of a change from what we saw with him in the queue, where he was a very strong, much like Jacob Melanson, only with more points, strong two-way forward that was capable of producing a point a game season in, season out.
Yeah, for sure. I think he kind of did refine his overall game towards the end of his Q career, which is probably why Seattle signed him. And it was fun when he got signed, because when Reed Duke signed with Vegas out of Brandon, you're like, oh, I wish it was a Q guy. So it was neat when Seattle decided to make him their first signee. So that's going to be the game he's going to have to play. And I think that's the case for a lot of guys that get signed late. You know, they're probably not going to be stars at the NHL level. And just because you're playing in a bottom six role in the AHL doesn't mean that you can't transition to playing that same role, the NHL. And I think Luke Hedman was probably aware that that was going to be his path. So it'll be curious to see if he's able to translate that. And usually these first guys signed are guys that were passed up a couple of times, or maybe they were drafted and then re-signed after their rights expired. So that was the case with him. And, you know, we'll see if he's able to parlay that into an NHL career. And it'd be a good story if he did, for sure.
Definitely, and joining him in Coachella Valley is something a little bit rare in the AHL these days. More of a veteran guy in goaltender Christopher Gibson, who spent 4 years in Chicoutimi from 2009 to 2013. The AHL, four guys there, probably the highest profile being Jeremy McKenna, who had a couple of 40-goal seasons with the Moncton Wildcats, now playing for the ECHL. Kansas City Mavericks, and of course Callum Booth, who won a President Cup with the St. John Sea Dogs in 2017 and appeared in the Memorial Cup with the 2015 Quebec Remparts, applying his trade in the ECHL level. He's actually bumped up and down between the AHL and the ECHL this season. And then we have our two NHLers, Pat. A couple of guys who I guess you could kind of put the small but mighty tag on both of them. Center Yanni Gourde and right winger Daniel Sprong. Two guys, especially in the case of Sprong, since he played in our own maritime backyard for the Charlottetown Islanders, guys who we became very well acquainted with over the years, especially, like I say, the aforementioned Sprong.
Yeah, exciting to see him finally kind of make his name in the NHL. And he was such a dynamic player to watch in the queue. I mean, maybe Pittsburgh gave him a sniff too early, perhaps, but it seems like things are working out. And both of these guys kind of simplify what you'd expect for if an expansion team was going to have success, I suppose. Yanni Gourde overlooked for a long time, and despite some impressive point totals, and then has to kind of claw his way to getting a pro contract. Sprong, obviously the higher drafted player, but just for whatever reason had a hard time catching on. So it's nice to see that he's been able to have success, and always exciting too. You know, obviously he played his U18 in Canada, but with his background in the Netherlands, it's really neat to have a guy with a non-traditional background having success in the NHL and being part of, surprisingly, a winning team. So good on both of those guys. That it's nice to see that there are some QMJHL ties to this surprising story out West.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Yanni Gourde, if you were to ask your average Quebec League fan to name the top scorers in the league over the last 10 years, Yanni Gourde may be one of the ones that they don't remember. Of course, he led the Victoria Voltique with 125 points in 2011-2012. Undrafted into the queue, I do believe, definitely undrafted into right. The NHL. And a tremendous story in Seattle and previously Tampa Bay before that. Let's move on to our 2023 draft prospect of the week. And Pat, this is going to seem like a bit of a softball for you. And yeah, I guess I did kind of plan it this way, but it's not to say he is not worth discussing. He certainly is making an impression on the Eagles blue line. He is the rookie defenseman, Xavier Daigue. Pat, give us a little rundown on what you've seen from this kid so far this season.
Well, there's been a lot to like for sure. Just a player just kind of does everything well. And then you're not somebody you really notice, but very defensively accountable, can slide in and out of traffic when need to be. He's going to refine his defensive game a bit more this year. As you know, when he came to training camp last year, he was just kind of running all over the ice. But as I said, he was very good to get back in position. And now seeing him playing a bit of a tighter ship now that he's, you know, used to this level of hockey. And for those that don't know, he was a second-round draft pick of the Eagles that was sent back, was one of the last cuts, which kind of surprised a lot of people. Definitely had the skill and responsibility to play in the queue last year. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But maybe it was better that he went back to the Quebec League to dominate, where he was the leading scorer among defensemen there last year. Defenseman of the year in the U18 league. And as I said, just kind of does everything well. We've seen him recently on the top power play unit in Cape Breton, part of a good defense pairing there with Connor Shortle, not an easy pair to play against at all. So he's not necessarily seeing the top matchups, but he's comfortable in the situations where he is. Earlier in the year, when the Eagles were riddled with injuries, you know, he was the veteran playing alongside Thomas Lavoie, the first overall pick, and they were actually a really fun pair to watch. And the fact that he's a plus and a plus minus of a team that's, you know, towards the bottom of the standings, obviously moving up, but you know, that kind of says all you need to know in terms of what he's been able to do at both ends of the ice. It looks like he has a chance of setting a new team record for most points by a rookie defenseman, so we'll keep our eye on that as well. Yeah, it's just been all around a very solid player. Not necessarily one you'll notice. You kind of have to watch for his stellar play, but you know, you'll watch, he's out there for the ice 45 seconds. It's, oh yeah, the other team didn't really get any good scoring chances, or oh, look at, you know, nice plays in the right spot to get a secondary or primary assist, and that's kind of been his game this year. And for those that have been watching for it, we've definitely enjoyed watching him in Cape Breton. Obviously, like your defenseman to be a bit bigger, but you know, he's only 17, so we'll see if he grows. And yeah, it's been great to watch Xavier Daigle in his rookie season.
And as you mentioned, Pat, you know, one of the few regulars, actually one of only three regulars with a plus rating on the Eagles so far this year. And even, you know, to drill down even further on that, the other two are Owen Arnold, who has been with the team all season, and Trevor Thurston, who, you know, since coming over from the WHL, has only been in about half of the team's games. And also his arrival coincided with that 16 winning streak, where obviously plus minus is going to be, it's going to be a little bit easier to be on the plus side on plus minus in those circumstances. So right. Yeah, definitely Xavier Daigle turning a few heads. And yeah, you don't want to be presumptuous about this stuff sometimes, but you know, I look at these rankings, and Daigle is a C rank prospect, which is generally beyond fourth or fifth round and beyond in the NHL entry draft. And out of the ones I see in that C ranking, he's one of the guys I think, you know, if there's a guy that's going to move up and maybe into that B bracket, he is as good of a candidate as any. So it'd be very interesting to see how he progresses. Q player of the week, we already mentioned Pierre-Olivier Roy. He is on defense for the team of the week as well, along with Nate Tivy of the St. John Sea Dogs. Kind of a surprise there to see him make an impression this early on in his career as a Sea Dog. The forwards are Alexander Doucette, the Val d'Or for Maxime Pellerin of the Victoriaville Tigre, who has gotten plenty of airtime in this episode so far, and William Viette of the Shawinigan Cataracts. Do you have a question? Do you have a comment? Do you have a suggestion? Send it our way. The Twitter handles are in our respective bios here at Will on the Air. And, you know, Pat, not going to be here every week filling in for Jamie Tozer, but you know what? If you have suggestions, send it to him anyway. I know he's going to let me know one way or the other. Doesn't matter if it's good, bad, or otherwise. In fact, if you're a little bit more critical, he'll be very quick to tell me what could be improved here.
DMs are open as well for me. So
DMs are open, slide in. Same here. So for sure, if there are any questions, if you have a hot take on something, we want to hear about it. Let us know. We'll get you on the air. A number of key matchups this week, Pat. Quebec seems to be more of the hotbed this week. I look at the Drummondville Shawinigan matchup. You know, Eric Belanger is still getting his feet underneath him behind that Voltigeur bench, and playing a team in Shawinigan that is battling the Volts in the standings at this point, and also a team like, and also a matchup like, you know, Sherbrooke at Rouyn-Noranda. 2-1, somewhat surprising team in the Huskies, and a very good Sherbrooke team. One of the several matchups this week that we should be looking forward to. Pat, from your own standpoint, obviously another busy week for the Eagles coming up. Anything in particular that's catching your eye in the league this week that we should be looking out for?
Well, the Quebec Rouyn-Noranda is interesting because Quebec was kind of proven to be vulnerable when they lost the two games. They were quick to bounce back. It was kind of fun there when both Quebec and Ottawa were on two-game losing streaks at the same time. It was like the order of the CHL had been shaken to its core with the Quebec Remparts kind of getting back on track. So that's something we're watching for. Obviously, we're going to be watching Drummondville. Curious to see how Josh Lawrence fits in Halifax. It'll be interesting to see where he slides into the lineup. And obviously, the Eagles will try to rebound against Charlottetown, a team they lost to in a shootout. Been a while since we've seen Moncton, since Oliver Chatney's debut. So Moncton seems to be establishing itself as the best of the rest in the Maritimes beyond Halifax. So that could be a good measuring stick game for the Eagles as well, coming off the four-game homestand. So, yeah, that's some of the things I'm watching around the league. Lots of interesting stories, a lot going on. And coaching and player moves always spice things up a little bit more.
Yep, and obviously we're getting closer to that point in the year, Pat. Player movement will be a lot more plentiful. World Junior Camp will be starting soon. It's all leading into what's going to be a great stretch run, no doubt, in the QMJHL. So first of all, thanks so much for taking the time, my man. And like I say, we've known each other forever, but it's always great to talk, just outside the context of, our usual inane Facebook chat and whatnot, and to actually put something good together like this. So again, thanks for taking the time.
Oh, thanks for having me, and it's always fun to chat Q hockey. And as you said, there's no shortage of good things to talk about. So happy to be on anytime.
Excellent. Well, we will be taking you up on that for sure. So. Also like to thank Connor Somerville behind the scenes for his continued excellent work as our producer here on the Q, the Hockey News on the Q, brought to you by BetMGM. We'll be back next week with more news and notes from throughout the league. Thanks for watching.